Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to call this meeting of the Renewal Enterprise District to order. And we'll start with approval of the agenda. Could I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, looks like that passes, Michelle.
All right, we're off to a great start then.
And when you're ready, could you conduct roll call?
Absolutely. All right, we've got Council Member Fleming, Supervisor Rabbit.
Here.
Vice Chair Corsi.
Here.
And Chair Tibbetts.
Here. Okay, moving on, let's take item two, public comment on matters not listed on the agenda, but within the subject matter of the jurisdiction. Michelle, let's start with recorded comments. Do you have any pre-recorded comments?
We did not receive any pre-recorded comments. And what I'm trying to do now is get our assistant elevated to co-host so that she can help me with this part of the meeting. Our assistant's name is Janet, and she's now joined us and we'll be looking at the list of attendees. We're taking comment on items not listed on the agenda, but within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. And through the chair, if we can have Janet look for any raised hands on item number two, you can raise your hand through the Zoom platform or you can the Zoom tank, or you can press star 9 if you're attending by phone. Janet, are you seeing any raised hands?
I do not see any raised hands right now.
All right, Chair Tibbetts, I think we can move on to the next item in the agenda.
Okay, we'll move to item three, the consent calendar. We have items A, B, and C, approved minutes of February 24th, 2021 board meeting, approved year-to-date financial report, and accept $10,000 donation from MidPen Housing. Would any members of the red like to pull any of these items for discussion? Seeing none, would anybody be willing to make a motion to accept the items of the A, B, and C of the consent calendar?
So moved.
Before we do that, Chair Tibbetts, can we go to public comment?
Absolutely, thank you. Yes, any members of the public wishing to speak?
I will let you know that we didn't receive any public comment on the consent calendar in advance. And I'll turn it over to Janet to call on members of the public who might wish to make a comment.
Okay, we have one hand. Michelle, can you put up the timer slide, please?
Sure, that'll give me just a minute. All right, we've got the timer slide up. And if you'll enable the speaker privileges, I'll go ahead and start the timer.
Okay, to our first commenter, Hugh Futrell, you should now be able to unmute yourself. Please state your name for the record and you will have 3 minutes to speak.
Thank you. Hugh Futrell, 204th Street. A query for the chair, is it appropriate to comment on the update item now, or would you prefer to hold any comment until that item arises on the agenda?
Consistent with the Brown Act, we should probably wait until it comes up on the agenda, if that's all right with you, Hugh.
Absolutely.
Right, I'll stop sharing the timer slide. And do we have any other public comment that you see, Janet?
No other hands.
All right, I think through the chair, it would be appropriate to take a vote now.
Okay, anybody willing to make a motion?
I'm moved.
I'll second that with a thank you to MidPen.
Okay, moved by Board Member Fleming, seconded by Vice Chair Corsi. And I also want to second the thanks to MidPen for the $10,000 donation. So could we do a roll call vote?
Sure. Council Member Fleming?
Aye.
Supervisor Rabbit?
Aye.
Vice Chair Corsi?
Yes.
And Chair Tibbetts?
Yes.
We'll record that as a unanimous vote.
Great. Okay, moving on to item number four, an action item, the Red Housing Fund. So Michelle, would you like to bring your presentation and speakers?
Sure, let me elevate them. And I will also be elevating Red Council, Sue Block. Thank you for your patience. All right, I'm going to introduce this item if it's okay with you, Chair Tibbetts, and then I'll turn the presentation over.
Sounds great, please do.
Thank you. So following commitments by both the Board of Supervisors and the Santa Rosa City Council to provide seed capital to a Red Housing Fund, the work to raise additional capital, draft loan agreements, identify a legal structure, foster a pipeline of development, and accomplish other general work plan items has accelerated. Clearly, we're in the devil's in the details phase of this fund. But before we dive into an update of where we are today, I'd like to review what led us here. The Housing Fund and its proposed products are responsive to and really an implementation of the Red's Joint Powers Agreement, which states that the purpose for the agency, or purposes for the agency, are to include buying, selling, investing in, developing, starting, lending, planning, financing, and implementing affordable and market rate housing, community development, and related infrastructure to cooperatively achieve its members' regional housing goals and advance climate resiliency. These purposes, as stated in the JPA document, were informed by and are an implementation of the county's recovery and resiliency framework. In review, the framework was prepared in collaboration with county departments and agencies, cities and other jurisdictions, nonprofits, and other community stakeholders. The recovery and resiliency framework is the product of input provided by community members and stakeholders during extensive community engagement that included 7 large countywide meetings with materials provided in both English and Spanish and translation services available at every meeting. Additional outreach included an online survey and more grassroots style meetings with over 80 community organizations and local partners. Among key strategies the public identified as important for achieving our housing vision include, and this is a quote from the Recovery and Resiliency Framework, identifying already entitled housing projects that are not moving forward and finding solutions to get them built. These have been the marching orders for the Red and its housing fund. And now to our update. Our fund advisors, along with city, county, and Red staff and council, I've been working on terms and conditions with investors that we expect will be presented to elected bodies for final approval in the upcoming months. To provide more detailed information on our progress, I'll now turn the presentation over to Olivia, Daniela, and Ulysse from Forsyth Street Advisors.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. And thank you, Red Board. It's great to be seeing you all virtually again. So thank you for taking the time. Today, we're going to, like Michelle said, provide a brief update on where we're at in the fund's work plan, where we're at capital raising, but a majority of today's discussion is going to be focused on the options for the fund's legal structure. Next slide, please. So for an agenda, as I mentioned, we'll spend a bit of the time talking about where we're at in the funds work plan, some of the capital raising updates we have for you all. Daniela will spend a bit of time talking about the funds pipeline development, and Ulysse will take us through a discussion on the options for the funds, legal structure, as well as next steps. Next slide, please. So here are the four parallel work plans we've been working on as we aim for that Q3 2021 launch for the fund. Definitely most active have been our timelines with Sonoma County and the city as we meet to discuss and negotiate terms for their respective agreements. We'll also continue to meet with you all, the Red Board, as needed to provide updates on where we're at with the fund's development, as well as to have you all weigh in on critical decisions for the fund over the course of its development. And lastly, we are continuing to take the more operational, structural task forward as we aim for that Q3 launch later this year. Next slide, please. So to spend a bit more time on capital raising, this has really been driven by our conversations with the county and city as we meet to discuss terms and translating those terms into eventual agreements. We've had the opportunity to meet fairly regularly with representatives from both the city and county, as well as their council, as we discuss these terms. These conversations have definitely been moving in real time. Even since we produced this presentation, we received word that we're actually going to be presenting to the Board of Supervisors in May instead of later this month. So in May, we'll be meeting to receive their approval of these terms and hopefully get their authorization for the county administrator to execute the documentation once it's ready. And once we have more of a firm timeline for the city, we'll definitely update you all on what that's shaping up to be as well. Next slide, please.
Hey, so I just wanted to provide a refresher on the types of projects that the Red will fund. And just, you know, again, in informal conversations to date, I know of at least 14 projects that would meet these threshold criteria and are interested in applying for funds once the application process opens. So just as a quick overview, you know, any project that applies for funding will be required to meet the four threshold criteria, which is to be, which is really to incentivize higher density infill transit-oriented housing. And then every project must meet at least one or more of the secondary evaluation criteria. And really the purpose of this is to meet the goals of the RED, which is to, as Michelle alluded to earlier, some of those goals include ensuring affordability and equity in housing developments, meeting our regional housing needs, and advancing climate resiliency. And so this criteria was really designed to offer flexibility and how developers meet the goals of the RED rather than being prescriptive. And that's because, you know, developers also need to design the buildings with cost and financial feasibility in mind, as well as really focusing on being ready to proceed. As we talked about, as Michelle talked about earlier, you know, one of the main goals is to fund projects that are ready to go in order to meet some of our housing needs as quickly as possible. You can go to the next slide. And I just wanted to provide an example of how, you know, costs can impact how many projects, whether it's affordable or market rate, that the fund can loan to. And so this is just an example scenario, but just for example, if a project today is costing $50 million and the fund provides a loan of 10% of that cost, that is equivalent to a $5 million subordinate loan from the RED Fund. And with $20 million, the fund could then fund four projects. As costs go up, such as through more prescriptive criteria. So for example, if there was a requirement that more parking spaces were required per unit, or specific materials were required, or rising material costs or increased labor costs, that really means that the fund can lend to fewer projects. And so in the second column, just an example, of even if a project cost was to increase by 10%, so going from 50 to $55 million, but the value of the project still stays as it was, because when a lender is gonna be lending to this project, they're looking at the value. And again, if rents are staying where they are today, the first mortgage or the construction lender would still keep their construction loan at the same amount, whether it's $50 or $55 million project. And so what ends up happening is that the RED fund would then need to provide a larger subordinate construction loan, and that would go from $5 to $10 million. And just effectively by increasing the cost, all of a sudden, the fund can only loan to two projects at $10 million each versus $4 million, or versus four projects. And so obviously as costs continue to increase even further, the fund is unable, is able to lend to even fewer projects. And so it's really important that we're able to lend to as many projects as possible, because the fewer projects we loan to makes the RED's investment even riskier. We have less diversification as more money is invested in a single project. And it's also harder to catalyze the market if we're not getting more than one project off the ground. And so again, it's really just important that we keep that criteria flexible, so we'll better enable projects to be financially feasible and get off the ground with the goal of building as many housing units as possible. So we can go to the next slide, and Ulysse is gonna discuss the two potential fund structures that the RED could have.
Great, thanks, Daniela. So on this next slide, what you'll see is these are a couple of the options that we've previewed previously to the RED board. And at this point, we are moving forward, as Michelle said, into the details with a couple of headline options. Option one is to set up the fund as a subsidiary of an existing CDFI. CDFI is a community development financial institution. And option two is to move forward with establishing a standalone 501c3 corporation. So again, I know we've previewed some of these options before, but just as a quick refresher, CDFIs are organizations like Enterprise, San Francisco Housing Accelerator Fund, Housing Trust Silicon Valley, LISC, LIF, there are many others across this region. And some of them do participate in establishing LLC subsidiaries, such as we're talking about for this particular fund. They're separated from other entities in that they're designated by the CDFI Fund, which is a part of the United States Department of the Treasury. And that specific designation gives them access to a broader range of capital. It is a useful designation more broadly across the financial world as banks and other investors think about where they might put some of their money. Standalone 501c3 option over on the right here. So if we move forward with this path, we are going down the path of incorporating a new entity that would be reviewed eventually by the IRS for tax exemption and charitability. I would say, and we'll get into this later, that's a discretionary process. And for that reason, there's no certainty on how exactly that process will go. There's some risks that we can talk about. We would have to set up the entity in order to support a charitable purpose. And you know, Michelle, at the outset of this call, went through what the mission of the RED is. One of the options for establishing the new 501c3 would be as a supporting entity to the mission of the RED. And an alternative would be to go a more independent route, more detached from the RED's mission as a non-supporting entity. Let's go to the next slide. So just an update on where we are in terms of our discussions with various possible partners in these different approaches. We're in active discussions with three different CDFIs at this point regarding whether and how the fund could be set up as a part of their organization. And I would say those conversations are very dynamic. We're further along with, you know, one or two of them than we are with the others, but all of them are useful discussions so far. Any of them, you know, we haven't reached a conclusion yet. Some of the CDFIs have to work through some threshold issues to decide whether this would be a viable path for them. And others are further along, and we're already more in the details of tweaking financial models, seeing exactly how roles and responsibilities could be allocated across existing staff, new vendors, others. So like I said, at least four different options that are on the table right now. When we add the last option, which is to work with Reds Council to see what the process would be for drafting governance documents and incorporating a new 501c3. Let's go to the next slide. So over the course of the next three slides, this is really to present to the board a lot of the details that would have to be thought through with respect to either option. And we're just going to go through a lot of the main dimensions that we want the board to be aware of. So with respect to cost, if we start with the subsidiary to a CDFI, setting up an LLC subsidiary is relatively straightforward, can be done quickly. On an ongoing basis, the fund can leverage the existing capacities of the CDFI, but would incur a cost to the CDFI of accessing those capabilities. And to the extent there aren't any, there are some missing capacities at the existing CDFI that need to be backfilled, we would need to hire additional parties, vendors, consultants to be able to provide those services. Over on the right, at the standalone 501c3, we have probably somewhat higher legal costs just because we have to go through all of the work of setting up a new entity. And there are some additional filings such as the Form 1023 with the IRS that they would review to approve tax exemption that would require a fair amount of work. And from a cost perspective on an ongoing basis, a standalone 501c3 is going to need to really figure out all of its staffing from scratch. So that just means, and you know, we've done this in different capacities, but identifying all of the things that a fund needs to be able to do in order to be successful. And each one of those contracts with any vendor, consultant, or staff person would have to be figured out. We'll get into that a little bit more later on. Timing, for setting up a subsidiary of a CDFI, this is a relatively quick process. And one of the nice things here would be that the subsidiary potentially could benefit from the CDFI's nonprofit status, although the IRS would need to approve the LLC's tax exempt status as well. But I would just mention within that context, you do have an existing 501c3, which is at the parent level that could receive any funding that's intended for the fund that needs to have a tax exempt entity to benefit from immediately. Over on the right, with respect to a standalone 501c3, the key driver here, we can draft documents at our own pace and we can submit them to the IRS at our own pace. But the IRS is going to have its own timeline for approving tax exempt status. So that is a variable in how quickly we can move on this path. And I want to put this timing bracket up against the overall timeline for the fund that Olivia went through earlier on in this presentation. And just keeping in mind that it's important to move as quickly as possible, be potentially able to start lending in quarter three of this year. We do need to keep a close eye on the timing in order to be able to do that. Next category is the ongoing red roll. And there's a variety of different levers that the red can use to be able to continue to be involved in the activities of the fund. I'm actually gonna start over on the right here with the standalone 501c3, because I think in that instance, it's more straightforward. The RED could decide how and whether it wants to participate in the 501c3's board of directors. It could also have other provisions inserted into the various fund governance documents that would continue to tie it to the RED fund as it develops. One example of how that might work, for example, is Daniela went through some of the fund through the RED criteria earlier in this presentation. So for example, one of the things we could do is build into the governance documents that the kinds of criteria that the fund uses for its investment activities would continue to move in sync and continue to sync up with the RED criteria as updated by the RED board. So there's these other levers as well for exercising continued influence on the activities of the RED fund. Over on the left, under subsidiary of a CDFI, the alternative to having representation on a board of directors is really for the Red to have participation through a role on the credit committee. That's an option. And that's really a specific governance entity that's set up to make certain decisions, assist in certain decisions on behalf of the LLC. And that could include things like chiming in on what the funding priorities are. That could also include things like chiming in on what the annual budget for the LLC subsidiary is. So lots of ways in which the Red could have an ongoing role in the mission of an LLC as well. There is an additional angle to this that is one of those that some of the CDFIs we're talking with are sorting through, which is, of course, each CDFI has its own mission statement, its own purpose. And we're coming up with something that's somewhat novel. And each CDFI has to evaluate how able it is to bring an LLC subsidiary, a new fund, basically under its umbrella and make it fit with what they already have from a mission, governance, management, and operating perspective. And with that, we can go to the next slide. All right, so starting at the top here, just a quick run through of the process. And some of this we've already spoken through a bit. But for any CDFI subsidiary, what we need to do first is confirm that there's interest there and do some preliminary work with each of the CDFIs that we're talking to get them to the point where they say, we're interested, we can give you a proposal for what this looks like. We can sort out roles and responsibilities and make that very specific. Assuming we could get to that point, you know, what we would do is we would come back to the board and say, here's what each of these CDFIs has proposed. And assuming that that looks okay, we would go forward with drafting legal documents, which would subsequently be reviewed by both the Red Board and the parent CDFI. And then we'd move towards incorporation of the entity. If we're moving with a standalone 501c3, really, in order to keep this option on the table, we need to obtain from the Red Board a preliminary approval to proceed. And that really means working with Red Council to put our best foot forward in terms of what articles of incorporation bylaws would look like and start to think about what Form 1023 that would need to be filed with the IRS would look like. So we would need approval to move forward with that. Then we'd actually have to draft the documents. And then once the documents are drafted, we would bring them back to the board for review and approval. And then we would incorporate the entity and go through the IRS process. The formation documents with a CDFI subsidiary and LLC, the key documents are articles of organization and an operating agreement. I would say that the operating agreement is the one that the Red would be most interested in, just because that's gonna talk about where the credit committee or any sort of alternative governance entity fits into the overall structure of the fund relative to its parent CDFI. And that's where, you know, whatever rights, responsibilities, ongoing role you want would have to be articulated. With respect to the standalone 501c3, we would go forward with standard articles of incorporation as well as bylaws. Ownership, CDFI is the owner of the LLC subsidiary. And for 501c3, there is no owner, there's just a board of directors that the 501c3 is accountable to. Tax exemption, talked about this a little bit. The CDFI parent would be tax exempt already. Though the LLC itself might need to also separately get approval of its tax exempt status. But like I said earlier, because you have the parent that already has a tax exemption, you have a fair amount of flexibility even before the IRS completes its formal process. Over on the right, with respect to the standalone 501c3, we have to go through the filing process and we have to complete the review and approval process. And just a quick note on the tax exemption, why is this so important? It's so important because we hope and expect to, alongside the public sector commitment of funds, be able to raise additional grant funding, additional PRI funding, additional investment into this program that's gonna need to have a 501c3 to be invested into. Mission, So again, the subsidiary fund's mission would have to be compatible with the parent CDFI's mission in order for the arrangement to work. And some of the CDFIs are looking into that. And then over on the right with a standalone 501c3, we are really starting from scratch. And we would be working with Red Council to figure out the best approach to the mission and figuring out some of the things that follow from that. Like, for example, whether the 501c3 would be best characterized as a supporting entity to the Red, or whether it would better characterize it as a not supporting entity. All right, next slide. All right, governance responsibilities. So at this point, we've talked through some of these things. A key mechanism for the Red's continued involvement in the CDFI subsidiary would be through its role on a credit committee or similar entity. Red would, through that governance entity, have a say in all key governance decisions as decided on. What decisions would be key governance decisions would be decided on by the Red as part of the operating agreement. And I'll highlight here that the next thing that the Red Board would have to think about is who exactly should be on that credit committee. And we can return to that at a later time. Alternatively, on the standalone 501c3 side, there would be a board of directors. The thing that the Red Board would need to do is figure out, you know, how are we going to move forward with setting up who's going to be on that board initially and on an ongoing basis? And in what ways does the 501c3 report back to the Red Board? Management and operations. On the CDFI side, the member, the parent CDFI, is going to provide the core of management and operating capacities. And that's whatever they don't provide will have to be backfilled from other vendors, consultants, other staff that they hire on a new basis. And for 501c3, the board of directors would have a much more involved process in figuring out how to manage and operate a new 501c3. And that's just because we have a new entity. It has no staff. It has no consultants or vendors. So we'd go through that process with the new board to figure out who the new entity will hire. And lastly, capitalization. So at the outset of this section of the presentation, we talked about what it is to be a CDFI a little bit. CDFIs are certified by the CDFI fund at the US Treasury. And really, if the fund is a subsidiary of an existing CDFI, that means that relatively quickly, the Red Fund could potentially benefit from a broader pool of resources. And that's just because the parent CDFI will be able to, on an annual basis, continue to apply to the CDFI fund for various funding programs that they run. Certain public, private, philanthropic entities also tend to view CDFIs in a different way than other entities that have specific programs designed for CDFIs. So over time, being associated with a CDFI could be beneficial to raising additional capital into the fund. Over on the right, an independent 501c3 could get pretty far down the same road as a CDFI, but it would need to take some time to establish credibility with lenders and build its own track record because it won't be benefiting from the parent. And we do have to be careful if formed as a supporting entity. One of the considerations is that a supporting entity can't become a CDFI, so it wouldn't be able over time to have all of the same access to all of the same resources as an entity that is or can be a CDFI would have. So gone through all of these different sort of considerations for both of these paths and some up here at the bottom with the recommendation, which is we have a timeline here where we're trying to move as quickly as we possibly can to get this fund up and running. So as not to lose options, we think it's important to, while we continue to engage with these three potential different CDFI partners and evaluate help them evaluate the opportunity with the Red Fund, while also our team looking at what the relationship would look like in totality, figuring out what it would cost, how much the goals of the Red Housing Fund would be captured. In parallel to that process, we think we need to begin processing the documents for creating a new 501c3 so as not to lose that path. While we don't have full control over the path for establishing a new 501c3 because there are some discretionary IRS approvals involved, it is a path that for right now we do control the next steps of that. And we would suggest taking them so that, you know, we can see how far we get even as these other options continue to evolve. So let's go to the next slide. And these are really the next steps, many of which I already touched on. On the CDFI path, we'll continue to engage with the three different potential partners. And at a later time, if one of these paths turns out to be viable, or if more than one path turn out to be viable, we would come back to the board and present on that specific arrangement and what it would look like for review and approval. On the 501c3 path, we do need a Red Board approval to proceed further with the drafting of legal documents. And when those are completed, when we have a draft, we would bring those back to the Red Board to take a look at. And we would highlight that, you know, on this particular 501c3 path, there are these additional responsibilities that the Red Housing Fund's Board of Directors would need to be ready to assume. So highlighting for the Red Board now that we would need to start to think about who would be a good fit for that Board of Directors. And we'd also have to start building out, you know, what the staffing model for that entity would be. And that wraps up our presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Let's look to the members of the Red Board for any questions. Board member, Director Corsi.
Thanks, Jack. Just a couple quick questions. First of all, are the CDFIs that you're talking to, are they local Sonoma County institutions?
I think they're best characterized as regional institutions, some of them, or institutions with a strong regional footprint. One of them is a regional institution. Actually, two of them are largely regional institutions. One of them is a national CDFI with a strong Bay Area footprint. None of them is specific to Sonoma County.
Just to make sure I understand, none of them are based or headquartered in Sonoma County?
That's correct.
Have we just not received any interest from local institutions? I'm wondering why, or if we just, if we don't know. How have we outreached to CDFIs to determine their interest?
So we know many of the CDFIs that have the capacity to set up these types of entities. So that's really been our starting point. If there's any additional entity that's more local that would be worth speaking with, we're just not aware of any that would have the capacity and the interest to fill this role. But we're certainly happy to have that discussion with additional entities. There's no reason why we couldn't. And, you know, would welcome an introduction if there's anyone that you're aware of.
I'm not personally. I don't know what actually qualifies as a CDFI. The only time I've ever had a discussion about CDFIs has been around the Red, I think. But
so I don't know if it's worth adding. Yeah, I mean, if there's any that anyone is aware of course, we're happy to speak with them. I would say that the kinds of capacities we need are at a fairly high bar. It requires a fair level of lending sophistication, a fair level of infrastructure in place in order to be able to administer a program like this. That said, it's absolutely possible that there's an entity we've missed. And so we can ask around, and if anyone hears, looks like Victoria has her hand up.
Yeah, just jumping on with what Director Corsi asked, what exactly does qualify an entity to be a CDFI?
So the CDFI fund maintains certification criteria. Basically what it is it is a specific type of financing institution that has a deep level of connection with a specific community that it serves. It also has certain other requirements, like it can't be a supporting entity of a governmental entity. So, you know, it couldn't be a supporting entity of the Red, for that matter. But I think just off the top of my head, top to bottom, its chief activity is financing for specific communities. And it's an independent entity from the government.
Now, are they not separate and distinct from banks, or can banking institutions have a CDFI portfolio?
So I can jump in here. Banks typically are able to lend to CDFIs. CDFIs themselves can be lending institutions, but there's a focus on an underserved community for a CDFI. And so oftentimes your traditional banks, what we think of as being a traditional lender, isn't offering concessionary products that generally target underserved communities. And so CDFIs, they exist to support a number of kind of mission motivated purposes. So we're more familiar with the CDFIs that deal with an affordable housing like structure that, you know, work to serve and build density and infill communities like we're talking here. They also exist for small business lending, small investments in, BIPOC organizations. They're generally financing intermediaries that support an underserved community. And so banks support that by lending to them, but they don't actually necessarily themselves become the actual CDFI.
Thank you for the clarification.
Just another couple of follow-ups, if I might. In one of your early slides, you mentioned that the drafting of an agreement at the beginning could be expensive, and I can't remember whether that was on the CDFI side or the 501c3. Could you clarify?
So, right, I think I did say that, and I apologize for any lack of clarity there. I think they're both comparable documents. I think there's a couple of differences that I'd point out. One is that for the 501c3 organizational documents drafting, that would have to be done by the Red. There's no other source to pay for those funds right now. That would be done. You would have to take the next steps to make that happen. In contrast with an operating agreement, you're really working hand in hand with an existing CDFI that might be able to assist in drafting that agreement. So they may take the lead on drafting that sort of an agreement, and the Red would have a more of a review and advise and make sure this document makes sense for us kind of a role. So I think in the former case, Red Council has to take the lead on drafting those documents. If you're setting up a new 501c3, in the latter case where you're working with an existing CDFI, those responsibilities for drafting, for review, for approval, the Red could have a different role in moving that process forward.
Okay. Then just lastly, you mentioned toward the end about staffing for a 501c3. Can you give an idea of what size of that staff might be? And is there any staff, any Red provided staff needed on the CDF ISA.
So either of those entities is going to have a lot to figure out, which is why these discussions are fairly extended with each of these potential counterparties. I think one of the things that, you know, to your point earlier about, are there any very local to Sonoma County CDFIs that we're talking with? One of the important things that any entity, whether a new 501c3 or an LLC subsidiary of a CDFI, would have to solve for is, how do we have that authentic connection with the local community? That may be through hiring somebody new. That may be through having some sort of a connection with the RED, where the RED shoulders some of those responsibilities for being sort of the go-between between the fund and the community. So I would say that brokering that authentic connection between the fund and the types of, and the community that it serves is going to be a key consideration in figuring out how to staff and operate this. With respect to more of the back office functions, I think those, they're not necessarily cookie cutter, but you sort of have a different menu from each of the different options. With an independent 501c3, you could do any of a number of things. You could hire staff that do your lending, your underwriting, your asset management, all of these other capacities. As an alternative, you could hire one of the CDFIs that we're talking to do much of that for you. There's other alternatives that could also be considered, like, for example, accessing resources that the city or the county may have and paying for those in some fashion. You could also consider hiring an entity to basically do all of the fund management, which is something that, for example, Forsyth Street does and some of the other funds that we run. It's an option put out there. So there's different ways to staff it. And I guess if we go down that road, what we would do is we would further show, here are some different options for how to make a 501c3 run. The constraints that we would be going with are really connected to, we have 20 million initially of lending capital. That's 4 or 5 transactions. The revenue that we can generate from originating and having that portfolio of $20 million worth of loans is really going to be the driving factor in what we can afford to pay for, how many capacities we can bring in-house versus hire from other sources. And one of the reasons why we are reaching out to these CDFIs is because it could potentially be a more cost-effective solution for a relatively small fund.
Okay, thanks for all of that. I may have some more questions later, but I'll get out of the way for others.
Thanks, Chris. Any other questions from board members? Board member Rabbit.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation. I appreciate that. And I will say that I don't think we have any CDFIs in Sonoma County, because I went through that exercise a while back, talking to a couple different bank CEOs about opportunities, including Exchange Bank. And that was had to do with post-fire issues and seeing if we couldn't develop a fund where a CDFI was part of the mix. And that's why we always kept getting directed into San Francisco. So for what that's worth, not sure if that's changed over the course of last couple of years, but that's what I found out at the time. I got to say that my inclination is always to try to maintain as much independence and flexibility at the same time. And I see the word subsidy, and I'm always a little worried what that means as we go forward. I guess my two questions are, there's talk about the one being more economical or more less expensive, and I guess trying to gauge. So if it's less expensive, but what are you giving up in return versus what's the total cost going forward? And really trying to balance that in my head of, is it worth it? You know, and what are the things that will be tied as an entity to another entity that we don't have total control over as a subsidiary? So I guess that's part of that. Have we done any further for a fund our size? Do we have ballpark figures? Is it twice as much, half as much? Just so I can gauge that, because again, I personally like that independence and being able to be responsive to those who indirectly at least have elected us.
We haven't exactly done that analysis, and maybe the best reason why is just because we're sort of solving for the best we can do under a variety of different scenarios. So let's put it this way. Let's say that you have $400,000 in revenue at the fund 1 year. I think the question isn't so much, you know, how much does it cost to run the fund? It's how much can you get with that? What's the most efficient way to allocate those resources? And, you know, I think just taking numbers out of, for example, sake, I mean, I think you could try and staff up with $400,000 in-house, but I think you'd rapidly find that that's not easy to do. It's not easy to find all of those capacities. It's not easy to cover all of those salaries. It's not easy to be the best possible entity you can be for that sort of a budget size. So I think the question is, you know, what do you really want to invest in? And, you know, I think $400,000, absolutely, you could probably bring somebody in to be at least part-time the face of the fund, and you could absolutely backfill the remaining capacities through a mix of third parties and consultants. Or you could use one of the existing CDFIs to provide those capacities for you. That certainly is an option. And you would have all of that reporting to the board of directors of the independent 501c3. Alternatively, you can, you know, go the LLC subsidiary of a CDFI route and continue to sort of exercise the control over the various levers of governance for that subsidiary that you have, benefit from the back office that's already going to be there, and invest strategically in what additional sort of functions do you want. You know, I think that's why it's so important hearing that you want the control there. It's just, what are the key levers of that control that in order for a CDFI to be a good home, you would be comfortable with? And we've seen it play out in different ways. I think one of the things that I would say that from our perspective as consultant to the Red, we are really trying to go to bat for is that you have control over all of the key decisions. So that when and if you choose to go the route of partnering with a CDFI, you still have all of the control and governance that you feel are essential to achieving your long-term goals while also effectively using the resources that you have today.
And I guess thank you for that. I appreciate that. And through the chair, I guess my follow-up question would be, and maybe this is even to Michelle, are we looking to go one way or the other? Are we looking to progress along a path? And what would be that next step along the way? Because it sounds like there's still some shaping that needs to happen. And I'm not sure if we're at a decision point or if we're at a identifying a path forward, or are they parallel paths? Is there backup options, and how that is perceived for today's discussion?
Well, respecting that this is really the board's purview, my highest level of comfort at this point is to keep all options on the table for a couple of reasons. We have not arrived at the point where we can say for certain what our strongest option is. And the other reason I'd be more comfortable with keeping all options on the table is that if something unravels, we've got a backup plan.
I think you said that really well. And I think it kind of goes to the point about, you know, do we have all the evidence in front of us to kind of weigh the scales and see which way to tip? For me personally, I'm not quite there. And I like the idea of having the options available. At the same time, I recognize at some point we need to pick a path and start driving forward down that. So thank you for that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, David. So seeing no other questions from the board. You got one, Victoria, please.
Well, I don't have a question, and it's neither a comment so much as, well, it's a bit of a comment, but not on what direction we should go in. I hope I'm not alone in feeling like this is a big decision for people like us who don't have a ton of banking experience and don't have a lot of experience in this arena. And so it feels like it's a lot of information to process, and I want to make the best decision possible, but it does feel like, to what Supervisor Rabbit said, you know, it's hard to figure out which direction to go. So I'd be very interested to hear additional questions and comments from the public.
Thanks, Board Member Fleming. On that note, let's go to the public and take public comment on this item.
All right, Janet, I imagine we're going to have some hands raised, and I'm going to get a timer slide up. And now that I've got the timer slide up, I can't see the raised hands. So I'm hoping that you can, and I'm not sure you can either, but can you call on members of the public who have their hands raised?
Yes. I don't see the timer slide, but I do have one hand. Should I be able to see this timer slide at this moment?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me
if it helps, it's Mr. Futrell. I can see it on my screen.
Mm-hmm. All right. I just need to share the timer slide.
Okay.
There we go. Can you see it now?
Yes. Okay. So Mr. Futrell, you should now be able to unmute yourself. Please state your name for the record, and you will have 3 minutes to speak.
Thank you. Hugh Futrell, 204th Street. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I did send a letter dated March 31st. I'm sorry I did not get it in time to get into your agenda packet. And I also noticed I rushed so much that my letterhead even misspelled my own company's name, which is the height of embarrassment. But I will quickly address two items. I did not intend to talk about the CDFI issue, but I, as some of you know, I've got 40 years experience in public finance and development. And CDFIs are, in my view, absolutely the wrong direction to take this for various technical reasons I can allude to. I will note that the great bulk of CDFI funds that slosh through the system are through regional and nationwide bank-controlled affiliates. I don't think that that's a mark against them, but it's just the reality of them. This is a very small amount of money. It is a very limited potential life to it. And there are far simpler approaches to take, including a third column, which does not appear, which is to contract with the city, probably through its housing authority, to issue RFPs, review proposals, and generate loan documents. That can be done vastly less expensively, vastly more quickly, and vastly with more control than dealing either with a new setup 501c3 with additional staff, or with a CDFI with its own staff, its own profit margins, and its own financial objectives. That being said, I do want to turn quickly to the issue of the threshold requirements. I am requesting respectfully that the board consider next month, specifically agendizing a revisiting to the question of thresholds, because without enhanced public exactions, subsidies to market rate projects are simply inappropriate and also unnecessary, of which the best case is the 150 million of projects, which my own company has invested in Santa Rosa, continues to build. Our projects are in existence all over the downtown. We did not ask for, receive, or expect subsidies. And there is a real question here, not adequately addressed and analyzed, how it is that my firm can do it and others are coming to you with their hands out for money. As a matter of public interest, I think you should get on top of that for sure. I don't want to belabor this. My letter gives considerable detail on that, but I do recognize that the objective here is to get more important things built downtown. And there are ways to do it that are more effective, more carefully considered, more responsive to the market, and more tied to the actual real life experience of practitioners like me with many years of success that should be taken into account. That being said, I would add only one other thing. Oops, I'm out of time. And I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Futrell. Do we have any other hands from the public?
There's one more hand. Okay. So Jesus Guzman, you should now be able to unmute yourself. Please state your name for the record and you will have 3 minutes to speak.
Great, thank you. Yeah, Jesus Guzman, Policy and Advocacy Director here with Generation Housing. Good afternoon, Chair Tibbetts and members of the board. Just want to offer a sort of broad general comment in support of the RED's housing fund. We're confident that the RED and its housing fund have the potential to significantly spur housing and meet our regional housing needs. The RED really has taken a thoughtful approach to accelerating the pace of housing production, I'll say across the affordability spectrum at all income levels, vis-a-vis the project criteria that the RED has put together, and also by exploring and advancing this really promising gap financing mechanism that could offer low-cost loans for affordable housing, which is a top priority, as well as additional types of repayable loans for market rate projects that can help prove the market for this type of higher density infill development, which again aligns with the goals and purposes of the RED. So by the RED Housing Fund investing in these kinds of projects, we can again reduce vehicle miles traveled, greenhouse gas emissions, and increase access to more walkable neighborhoods, all of which Generation Housing is extremely supportive of. So we want to thank, first and foremost, the RED Board, the County Board of Supervisors, and the City of Santa Rosa again for investing in the RED and for your commitment and leadership on this. And we ask you for, again, for your continued support of the RED's Housing Fund, which we view as an essential tool to meet our regional housing needs. So with that, thank you.
Thanks, Jesus. Any other hands? I apologize. I've lost the participant box.
I'm not seeing any other hands.
Do we have any recorded messages?
We did not receive, let me stop sharing here, and then I think we can see everybody. We did not receive any pre-recorded messages in advance of this meeting.
Okay, great. Well, let's close public comment and go back to the board for any questions or comments. Okay, seeing none, I have some questions and comments. One, I wanted to address Mr. Futrell's comment about this being a subsidy. And my question, well, actually, I guess I'm asking for clarification because how I've understood this fund to work is that we would be actually loaning a project money. That loan comes due upon occupancy. And at the end of the loan period, we would receive all the money back, as well as receive, if all goes well with the loan, a net profit in the form of interest payments that we earn on the loan. And we are unlike a housing authority where we are going to forgive that loan or try to extend a covenant in exchange for forgiving that loan. So I was wondering if our council could kind of address what is the definition of a subsidy and how do we kind of stack up against being a subsidy versus a loan?
Well, I think, you know, the sort of common understanding of what a subsidy is funding that would be provided at below market rate, either in the form of a grant or a low interest loan or a forgivable loan or something like that, that is as compared to the market, something less, something beneficial. So I think, you know, my understanding of the proposed form of the loans that the RED Fund would make, that they wouldn't necessarily be classified as a subsidy.
So we would have to, you're saying that the definition and how we will scrutinize whether it's a subsidy or not is going to come down to probably what the interest payment is, and is that higher than the average or consistent with the average, with what fair market is for a commercial loan these days?
I think that would be the most common way to analyze it, yeah.
Okay, well, I appreciate that definition, Ms. Block, and I think, you know, Hugh brings up a good point that the board needs to be aware of, because we should not be in the subsidy business at all. We should be in the business of issuing people essentially gap funding or loans to help get projects off the ground and then recover that money with interest, to the best of our ability on behalf of the public. So we'll continue to watch that for sure as we move forward. One thing that, Board Member Fleming, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. I think that we need to be focused on the outcomes here. And the outcome is to densify our downtown, reduce vehicle miles traveled, and generally create more tax bases for both of our jurisdictions across the county. And I'm not uncomfortable with the word subsidy if that's what it takes to get there. You know, some people might say, you know, well, I got to Harvard, no problem. And it's like, well, you know, your dad and your grandpa all went there. And so, you know, I applaud everybody who's able to make it on their own. Not everybody had the same resources or wherewithal. And frankly, what's more important to me is that we get where we're going, not as much in the moralistic nature of how we conceptualize how we get there. That being said, I'm not interested in handing out money to people who don't need it or gaming the system. And I think that we're gonna put a lot of fail safes in place to make sure that we don't do that. But I disagree with the premise of the comment on its head. And I think that we should move forward as we have been.
Okay, thank you, Board Member Fleming. Board Member Rabbit.
No, I appreciate that as well. I appreciate the letter and that having this discussion today, I think it's an important one to have. I think all along, you know, just like with this last item, I like to be flexible in terms of moving forward. And I agree with Director Fleming, it's about the outcomes at the end of the day. It's how you get there that's important as well. My dad didn't go to Harvard. He went to Heald, where he got his contractor's license after immigrating to this country and then went on to become a developer. And like Mr. Futrell, apparently, didn't take any outside public subsidies because didn't want to deal with that. And my family still deals in that same sector and still has not accepted those dollars. At the same time, I think the flexibility that we have built into the housing fund is not a bad thing per se. Ideally, there is a lot of soft costs. There is a lot of infrastructure improvements. We've talked about that already, I think, with certain projects. And, Mr. Futrell is also helping us by having successful housing projects go forward, which will only increase the likelihood of future successful housing projects and minimizing any gap fund that any developer has, no matter how deep or how short their pockets are. So I do appreciate that. I just want to make sure that we put that out there, that the Red is not embarking on writing a check to anyone at this point in time, as far as I know, that is has a project pending that's all market rate and all privately funded and whatnot. So we have a long ways to go. We have a path to get there, but I think it's really that collective good that will increase the market for everyone, quite frankly, and make the downtown area more desirable and have hopefully people flocking to live there, work there, and play there. So thanks for that opportunity.
Thanks, David. And actually, while I have you, would you care to give comment on your recommendation? Well, Michelle, do you want it in the form of a motion or just direction from the board about which option to move forward with or both in tandem?
In your packets and certainly on your chair notes, you've got the recommended actions and I would read them and then we can do a roll call vote would be my recommendation.
Okay. Board Member Corsi, do you want to make comment?
Yeah, I had a question just based on Mr. Futrell's comments that have produced some good discussion here. Want to continue that just a little bit and ask if the idea of contracting with the city's housing authority has been looked at, is that a possibility?
I can start on that and then maybe Ulysse can follow up. We did have a conversation with Dave Gwine before he left about the possibility of taking advantage of some of their capacities, contracting for that. And at the time, he was open to that idea. Ulysse, you want to add anything?
I think that's right. And I think I would add to that, it's not just us who had that discussion, but I think you know, among the CDFIs that we're speaking with as potential homes for the fund, there would potentially be an interest in contracting, you know, with somebody who has, you know, on the ground experience. And one of the ways to solve for that could potentially be the housing authority. So I think along the line in evaluating all of these different options, we're going to be backfilling for all different kinds of capacities, and certainly the housing authority should be considered among the possible options.
Okay. Yeah. In the interest of keeping all our options on the table, I would encourage us to include that in whatever motion comes forth.
Okay. Thank you, Board Member Corsi. We'll maybe I'll look to you to do the motion today, if you're willing, and you can add that to the motion.
All right.
I'd like to make some comments before we move on to the motion itself. You know, I think that I would like to add the housing authority to our suite of options just to have information. I'm going to be a little bit bearish about whether they're going to be the right fit for a number of reasons. You know, I think just generally speaking, I'm falling into where it sounded like Board Member Rabbit was falling himself, where control, I think, is going to be very important with this money and with this body. And I think if we go with the CDFI, we're necessarily going to surrender a lot of that authority. We're probably, our level of governance is probably going to be adding a member or two from this board to their lending committee, which would then be subject to their board. And I just think that, you know, what I'm hoping this morphs into being is kind of following the same trajectory as Sonoma Clean Power. And when we think about how Sonoma Clean Power started up, there were a lot of these discussions. Can we join Marin Clean Energy? How can we kind of create what we need to create to meet our renewable energy goals? But they decided to go it alone, completely uncharted territory. It probably costed a little bit more than trying to work with a partner, but now it's become a truly magnificent government agency, providing good service, cheaper rates, and they have other jurisdictions looking to them for support now. I would like to see us follow in those footsteps. And I think the way that we're going to get there best is through the 501c3 option. But I definitely support keeping the CDFI option on the table. And I think what Hugh said is exactly correct. I'm working with a CDFI now on a project, and they're not that flexible, and they deal with participant lenders, which is a pro and con. That you know, a pro in the sense that potentially we would have access to more capital, but a con in that you know, they kind of control a lot of the conversation as well. So I'm going to be looking for 501c3 direction myself, but I'm excited about getting all these options. And thank you, Michelle and Forsyth Street. So that said, Board Member Corsi, would you be willing to make that motion?
I'm sorry. Can I just jump in quickly for the clarifying question? Are you asking us to evaluate the Housing Authority as a possible home for the fund, or as alongside a standalone 501c3 or a CDFI, or as a possible service provider in conjunction with either of those first two options?
What I would encourage is that we have as many options as possible. I'm not suggesting that we turn over this money to the Housing Authority for the Housing Authority to make decisions. I want to be the decision makers here. I want to have as much control of this as we can, as Jack and David both said. I'm not sure which of those that you just said I'm looking for, because we haven't had any information presented to us on the Housing Authority option other than what Mr. Futrell said. So I'm just wanting to keep the possibilities in the mix and to better understand it as we go forward.
And Yulise, if I could expand on that just a little bit, the way I interpret that thought about the Housing Authority is that we would retain the fund, we would retain all governance, but we would essentially contract with the Housing Authority to administration and underwriting on our behalf. That would be how I would envision it.
Okay. Thanks, that's helpful.
And I think to that end, just a simple pros and cons of what that might look like. I don't feel particularly inclined to go that route, but I do think that hearing what the benefits and costs would be might be helpful in us in making our final decision.
Awesome. Okay, anybody willing to make a motion, including the Housing Authority recommendation?
Michelle, would you repeat what you said earlier, what you're looking for here?
So we've got some recommended actions on the agenda and in your board packets. One is to receive the Housing Fund discussion on legal structures. And the second is to authorize an expenditure for legal services to draft key governance documents for the creation of the RED Housing Fund as a 501c3, not to exceed $20,000.
I would move to approve those recommendations and where are we saying that we're keeping CDFIs and the Housing Authority on the table?
We're not taking them off the table, but with any of these recommended actions. So we will continue to explore those options. There isn't an action to go that route at this point. And Sue, I don't know if you want to weigh in and help with the language for the recommended action. My sense is that the board is looking, wants us to consider the Housing Authority as a potential service provider and would like us to explore that. And I'm not sure if we need it as an option or an action, or if we just consider that direction.
Yeah, I think you could just authorize and direct the RED staff and consultants to continue to evaluate alternatives for the structure and governance of the fund, including the separate 501c3, a relationship with an existing CDFI, and potential relationship with the Housing Authority.
Maybe we should split this up into two things.
David, you raise your hand.
Well, I was smiling earlier because I perhaps we're not pushing, well, personally, I feel like we're not pushing CDFI, you know, off the table, but it's on the edge and it's we're going to look the other way if it falls. I just don't want staff to expend an extraordinary amount of time or energy or money exploring something that I would have to have my arm kind of twisted going forward.
Could we do it through the chair? Could we do a straw poll?
Hold on. Before we go to the straw poll, I'd like to take, I've got the motion in front of me now, and I'd like to try to just take a stab at it.
Please go ahead.
And the one thing I want to say too, David, about the CDFI, because I'm right there with you, but we have a development timeline that we're trying to achieve for this year. And I think that what that does, by having that option, even if it costs us a little bit more money, if we run into a serious roadblock on the, in the 501c3 avenue, I think it would sure be nice to have a fallback where we could maybe contract with the CDFI for 1 year, 2 year basis to buy us time, but still get stuff off the ground. So I'm going to include that in my motion. If anyone wants to do an alternate motion, I welcome it. So I move that we receive the RED Housing Fund discussion on legal structures presentation and authorize staff to proceed with the drafting of key governance documents for the creation of the RED Housing Fund as a 501c3, semicolon, continue conversations with potential community development financial institution partners authority to act as program administrator, authorize expenditures for legal services to draft key governance documents for the creation of the RED Housing Fund as a 501c3, not to exceed $20,000. And that'll be the motion. Waive further reading. Does that work for staff and the board? Well, we'll ask the board in a vote, but does that work for staff?
I missed a good part of that. You were breaking up after community development financial institutions.
Oh, okay. So it was after we'll start at creation of the RED Housing Fund as a 501c3 semicolon, continue to engage in conversations with community development financial institutions as a potential partner, semicolon. And then the last one was engage in conversations with the City of Santa Rosa's Housing Authority to serve as program administrator. And then I went on to talk about authorize expenditure for legal services to draft key government governance documents for the creation of the RED Housing Fund. And I'm actually going to leave out 501c3 because it's going to be assumed that these legal resources will be available to all three options. So authorize the expenditure of legal services up in an amount not to exceed $20,000 and waive further reading.
Thank you. I'll second that.
Thanks, Chris. Do you want to do a roll call vote?
All right. Sure. Council Member Fleming.
Yes.
Supervisor Rabbit.
Aye.
Vice Chair Corsi.
Yes.
And Chair Tibbetts.
Yes.
All right. I'll spend tomorrow morning writing out that motion. As I replay.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
I replay the recording. All right.
Okay. So seeing no more items on the agenda, we are adjourned.
You might want to announce the date for the next meeting.
Yes, I apologize. So the next board meeting that Michelle has proposed here for us is April 19th, 2021. Is everybody good with that?
Should be on everybody's calendars already.
Already, okay.
All right, I'm seeing nothing but thumbs up, so we're gonna adopt that, and we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all.